Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. The Haunted Schoolhouse. In my little village part of town, we have an old schoolhouse. The building is two-story with a colonial pitch roof and a bell tower. My great-grandmother actually went to school in the schoolhouse before it was closed. A few years later, the village was given the rights to incorporate a volunteer fire company. The fire company originally had a firehouse in the valley in town, but it was basically just a garage. So the town allowed a department the rights to the old schoolhouse. They added a large truck bay on the right side. The bay had only two garage doors and was two trucks deep on either side. They renovated to make the building a useful firehouse. The firehouse was in use until 2009 or so. So the firehouse had a very simple layout. Now it should be noted on the back wall of the truck bay, we hung up the winter chains for the fire trucks. They don't have four-wheel drive, so we have to put these monster chains with spikes on them on the wheels to grip the road during harsh snowstorms and winter. On the right was the truck room. There were five doors off the truck room to the left into the main section of the building. The one all the way to the back was to the mechanics room, where our designated engineer would have all his equipment to work on minor things on the trucks. The door next to that was an old washroom, which had a toilet no one ever used and a giant sink. The next door went into a tiny room with a built-in desk. You could fit maybe three people wide in the room. It was our radio room, where we could talk to dispatch from the firehouse. The next door was two doors that slid together and locked. These doors went into the main hall of the firehouse, which we literally just called the main hall. There was one more door on the other side of that, at the very front of the truck bays, that also went into the hall. Inside the hall, against the right wall, there was a small stage. On the left wall, there was two built-in shelves with hidden compartments and a small closet-like area that was only ever covered with a curtain, where we put all the chairs and tables the firehouse owned. On the back side of the hall was a large window opening into the kitchen, which was really just like a normal household kitchen. Next to that window was the door that led to the hallway, which led out to a set of concrete stairs down to the back parking lot. Off that hallway was a small second hallway that led to the boys' and girls' bathrooms. And directly across from the bathroom hallway opening was a large room that we called the meeting room. The basement of the firehouse was still set up like an early 20th century cafeteria. I hated being down there. Also, there were stairs that spontaneously went up into the middle of the firehouse stage in the hall. Like, what? So, I have a lot of stories involving the old firehouse. I used to live on this road about a half a mile from the firehouse. I was a junior firefighter at the time, and the pagers went off. I got on my bike, my little brother got on his bike, and we rode into the firehouse. I missed the fire trucks, so my little brother and I went inside to sit in the radio room and listen to the radio. I was in the radio room at this point. My little brother had wandered out front and was playing an imaginary game of Pokemon. A senior fireman showed up and was out front watching my little brother while I listened to the radio. As I was sitting there, I suddenly heard the chains rattling. I got up and bolted out of the firehouse, immediately accusing my brother of rattling the chains. But the senior fireman told me that he had been out front the entire time. I went back to inspect the chains, also rather begrudgingly, and found that they were hanging far enough up that wall that no mice could have moved them. They were at least a foot and a half off the ground, hanging on a coat rack on the wall. I pretty much freaked out at that point and grabbed my bike, my little brother, and we left. After that, I refused to stay alone in the firehouse, even for a minute. There were other strange things that happened there. I used to hear someone walking around in the main hall when I was in the meeting room. Once, my oldest sister was actually sitting in the meeting room with me and heard it. We occasionally heard someone tapping a pencil on a table or desk, but again, we'd be the only ones there. My father used to fill out reports on the computer in the meeting room when he had time, so most of the time he was alone, and he'd actually hear people talking. For whatever reason, I absolutely hated the bathrooms. I wouldn't go down that hall if someone paid me to, and I never went into the women's room alone. I always waited until someone else said they needed to go, then I tagged along. The building has since been closed as a firehouse and renovated into affordable housing apartments. I know one of the residents of the apartments, but we really don't talk much and we're not close, so I don't feel comfortable asking him about paranormal things. I mean, these experiences could have been just residual. They could have been intelligent, and as I was a teenager, it could have been a positive spirit or negative one. But the truth is, I really didn't want to find out then or now. The Haunted Mansion. I often hang out with a friend who was my roommate in college. His uncle owns an entire mountain in the Catskills, and it's a beautiful area. And we often go hunting there, as there's lots of land. But that entire area is awash in paranormal activity, and this mountain is no different. I've had two experiences, one just as scary as the other. The first one was during deer season. My friend put me up in a tree stand that overlooked the open areas of the mountains and could see all the barns and the house. I was up there for maybe an hour, hadn't seen anything, so I was scrolling through Facebook on my phone, and then I hear something strange. I look up and I see some movement in a distant field, maybe 400 yards away, and what sounded kind of like drums. I raised my gun and looked through the scope, and it was 8 or 9 people dancing together in a circle, mostly what looked like males, many of them shirtless. I got on my radio and talked to my friend, who was down in the woods maybe 300 yards in the opposite direction, and described to him the situation. I also asked him how many people were home, and he said no one was at the time. I watched for maybe 5 minutes before the drumbeats faded and the people disappeared one by one. My friend said it was likely Native American spirits practicing their ancient rituals. The second incident was when we were just walking up the hill. We came to an opening. It was an old overgrown field, not very large, and there were a couple of old rusty cars laying around. We got into a small knoll, and maybe 75 yards away from us there was an old well, the kind that's circular and you had to drop a bucket down into. It was broken down and old, but not in too bad of shape, all things considered. What happened next left us paralyzed and gave me, and maybe him, several sleepless nights. A man came climbing up out of the well. He was wearing old-style clothes, and he had a beard. When he got up, he stopped and looked all around, and despite us being right there, didn't seem to notice us at all. He then ran into the woods and disappeared. Apparently, some unsavory characters used to dispose of bodies down that well. I don't know if it was a full-bodied apparition of a victim or something more sinister, but we never went back to that deserted field. The Haunted Old House. I live here on the coast of Maine, and I own an old Dutch colonial house. I'm a firm believer of the paranormal. Weird things have happened to me since I was a young boy. Like, I saw one day, rabbit hunting in Lowell, Maine, a man standing on a stone wall, and he was no more than 3 foot high. Amazed to what I saw, I turned to watch him saunter off down the stone wall, and he disappeared like the blowing of the wind. I never have seen anything like that again. Now, present day, my house is haunted. My wife and I were making a quilt. I was standing with my back to the kitchen, and my wife was sewing the quilt when she saw our cat playing with a very bright orb. My wife saw it, and I caught it out of the corner of my eye. Our cat was standing in front of the stove, and he was reaching for or playing with the orb. It just vanished between his paws. The brightness of the orb looked like an old-time flash from a camera. That's not all that's happened here. I was renovating my kitchen, so when I started tearing into the walls, and by God, there's between the walls was a perfectly framed out door with a threshold. Well, I thought it was cool. I wanted to keep it and close in our doorway. Well, my family was freaked out. I said it's a doorway, nothing else. A week goes by and I'm doing work there in the area of the doorway. I turned my head and saw the figure of a man, an old man, at the bottom of my stairs. He stared up the cellar stairway at me. I stopped and looked again, and he was gone. I closed the door back up into the wall, sealing it in. My family is happy that I did that. They all had gotten bad vibes from it being exposed. One more thing happened at Christmas one year. It was a wicked blizzard and we lost power. So I got the generator out and set it up to power my pellet stove. I did that for the heat. It was screaming outside, so my daughter built a little shelter with blankets and chairs, and we heated the house and watched the movie. Well, we fell asleep around 3 in the morning, and then something woke me, and I looked into the hallway, and I see this lady in a pale blue smock who said, "What lovely music you listen to." I went back and camped in the living room with my daughter. The next morning, I asked my wife if she came downstairs in the middle of the night, and she said no. She was in bed all night, as I was in charge of taking care of the generator. That was weird, and all my daughter's friends that have stayed in our place have seen the lady that I described to my wife. I've researched the property owners, and one person sticks out above all the rest. Her name was Florence E. She owned my property decades ago. Maybe it was her we were being visited by. But I have no idea who that old man was that stared at me from the bottom of the cellar steps. The lady in the car. When I was only 8 years old, I saw my first ghost. I lived in a city in southern Ohio. Across the alley from the back of our house was an old shed. It seemed to be used for storage of the abandoned old house in front of it. Curious children wanted to know what was in there. My sister, 2 years older than I, and a neighbor boy of about the same age, and myself decided to check out the contents of the shed. We had entered it several times, nosing through old boxes of books and dishes, just normal storage stuff, other than the small bed in the corner, which had linens and blankets. Also, there was an old car with side steps and a windshield that cranked out. We thought it strange that sometimes the bed would be made neatly and other times it would be as though someone had slept there. We thought maybe someone else was sneaking in there as well. Then the day came when my sister and I decided to step up on the side step of the car and look in. There in the back seat, we both saw a lady lying across the entire seat. Quickly, we got down from the side step. We hesitated, but did peek one more time to see if the lady was still there. She was not. We told our mother and she replied, "It's only your imagination." I've never been convinced of that since my sister and I both saw this at the same time. 20 years later, I asked my sister if she remembered the car in the building, and she replied, "Yes, and the lady in it." The haunted desk. This occurred 15 years ago when I was living in California. My boyfriend and I purchased a used oak desk and were bringing it home on a flatbed trailer when one of our tires blew out. We thought nothing of the tire blowout at the time. We were in the process of moving into a new apartment and were setting up house. When we finally got home with the desk, we put it next to our bed. The ensuing 3 months, my boyfriend complained that aliens were watching him. He said this almost every day. I ignored his complaint because I thought it was just stress. Finally, on the night of January 1st, I woke up looking at my desk and saw the apparition of a young man sitting there staring back at me. I thought it was a hallucination or some trick of shadow and light, so I blinked and tried to focus my eyes. The apparition remained. He wore round glasses. He had bangs that were cut straight across. He looked to be 20-something. It was transparent and colorless, though I could tell that his hair was blonde to light brown. The apparition lasted about 5 seconds. When he vanished before my eyes, I felt a very tall presence standing beside the bed. Then the name Ray came into my head for no reason. I felt no fear during the entire incident. While I was still lying awake trying to figure out what to do, my boyfriend woke up and immediately said, "Damn it, I feel like there are aliens watching me right now." That's when I told him we needed to talk. After the initial sighting, we kept the desk for 3 more months. The desk had always made loud cracking noises. I began to attribute those noises to the ghost. We were both pretty uncomfortable and couldn't sleep after my sighting. We finally got rid of the desk and moved into a different apartment, which solved the aliens watching me problem once and for all. And we actually sold the desk for a profit. In a way, we got paid to get rid of our ghost. The condemned house. There are skeptics who will read this, but I guarantee it on my life that my experiences were real and forever cemented my belief in the afterlife and in spirits. I never believed in ghosts until my family moved into a very nearly condemned house. You know, fixer-upper. Big city, little money, you know the deal. We didn't know that there had been a murder in that house until after we moved away. It took almost 2 years of continuous work, but we made that house beautiful. It was a big house, and we were renting for next to nothing because our landlady lived right next door, but it was nowhere close to perfect. Even though it was a big house, the setup wasn't that great. My sister and I had to share a room. My other sister got to sleep in the basement, although how she did it after what started happening, I have no idea. My brother got his own room for a while, and my parents shared a room, obviously. Well, for a while, we loved the house. It was bright and had lots of windows, perfect for heating and cooling. We had a huge living room, a huge dining room, and a huge kitchen. It was perfect for our huge family. Everything was pretty normal until we cut down the giant pine tree in the backyard. I don't know why, but I think that unsettled whatever spirits were there. I've learned since then that spirits don't like change in their environment. Some unexplainable events started happening. Weird things that I could only categorize as paranormal. This wasn't the first time I had encountered paranormal activity. In another house we used to live in, we could hear the spirit of an old man walking around that night, almost as if he were on patrol. I remember one time I had gotten a balloon and drew a face on it with a marker. As the helium started leaking out of it, it didn't sink to the floor like a normal balloon would. It seemed to be caught in the middle. It drifted from room to room, the face always pointing forward. We tried pushing it to the ceiling and to the floor, but it stayed right there in the middle, drifting to each room for a couple of days, until we finally found it on the floor next to the couch. We moved not long after that. My sister and I, like I said before, shared a room. It was very easy to hear voices carry up the staircase, seeing as we were right off the landing. But sometimes we could hear someone call my name from downstairs, and no one was there. I never felt frightened, only curious and confused. At first, you try to dismiss the voices carrying up the stairs. You find excuses. Mostly you can blame it on your imagination, but that only goes so far. The reality was someone was calling my name when no one was home. The next instance was one night. My sister was already sound asleep, but I was having trouble because I had an uneasy feeling. This would be an experience I couldn't blame on my imagination. I felt a force bear down on me while I was trying to sleep. A heavy breathing filled the room. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't move. But a minute later it passed. It was around that time I realized whatever was inhabiting that house had singled me out. The thing had never called my sister's name, even though she was hearing the same voice. It had progressed so now not only did it sound like someone was calling my name from downstairs, but right outside my door and sometimes right behind me. After school one day, it just so happened I was home alone for an hour or so. I decided to play with our new computer. This was only the second computer we had ever had, and this one was far better than the one before it. It was a Christmas present, and it only being February, there were still things we hadn't discovered. I found out that we had a voice recorder. So, just experimenting, I let it run the entire time through, without saying anything. I wanted to know what it would sound like if I just let the recorder run. Well, playing it back normal, I heard something that I knew I hadn't heard while recording. There was no noise made during that time, not even a squeak from my chair. The bird was even unusually silent, which is strange, because usually she whistled like a maniac whenever she knew there was someone within earshot. Well, the noise was almost indecipherable, but hearing it a couple of times through, it sounded like a cry for help. What was exactly said was, "No, don't." It was a very pitiful sound of someone wailing, especially if you can't identify who or what that someone was. As soon as someone got home, I let them listen to it. They brushed it off, saying that it was an effect from the computer, or that could have been a car driving past. But how can they explain the unmistakable sound of someone, a woman nonetheless, saying, "No, don't"? And our house is silent unless windows are open. We were set far enough from the road to where we couldn't hear the cars if all the windows and doors were closed, and being February, they were. My mom said it could have been the heat vent, but since when do heat vents talk? I record in complete silence. Nothing could disprove the existence of that voice on our computer. Of course I saved it and tried to record in total silence again, but it was a rare afternoon that I got alone. With six people in your family, hardly a moment goes by when at least one person isn't home. Finally, after all of that, I saw her. I knew it was a girl or a woman, because whenever we heard someone call our names, it was a woman's, and I had recorded a woman's voice. I had gone into the basement to put a load of laundry into the washer. My sister's basement room was right next to the laundry room, and there was no wall that separated, only a long table and a chair moved against the washer. When you were looking straight at the washer, or in my case, in it, you can see the chair slightly out of the corner of your eye. I bent down to pick up some more clothes from the basket I had brought down, and when I straightened, I saw out of the corner of my eye a figure that hadn't been there a second ago sitting in the chair. As soon as I looked directly at the chair, there was nothing there. It didn't take but half a second, but her image had been burned into my memory forever. She had long dark hair, very straight, ending near the middle of her back, wearing a red V-neck shirt that was form-fitting and a black skirt that seemed to be made of leather, ending right above her knee. She was light-skinned and fairly modern-looking. I hear a lot about hauntings by spirits that had died hundreds of years ago, but not her. She had to have died within the last 10 years. The funny thing about seeing her, though, is her image was blurred, but her face was even more so. I could tell exactly what kind of clothes she was wearing, but I couldn't tell anything about her face because it was blurred. One night, my sister was having a get-together with a bunch of friends. My mom had just bought a digital camera to go with our new computer. It was a new toy that we all started taking pictures with. We took a whole bunch of group shots and funny poses. I remember we only took 21 shots because I was the one who took most of the picture. My mom loaded the picture onto the computer and there, in between frames 17 and 18, with no number attached to it, was a girl with long dark hair, a red shirt, and black skirt, sitting on the couch, looking straight forward. We caught her profile, and she looked exactly the same as when she was in the basement. I recognized her instantly. It was an odd picture because the entire frame was out of focus, and she was faintly outlined. Her feet seemed to disappear, and let me just say it scared the heck out of every girl at that party. Also, no one was wearing a red shirt, not even my brother. It had to be the ghost I had seen before. I gave her the nickname of Christy for an unknown reason. It was just a name that popped into my head one day, and that was her name. It wasn't too long after the discovery of Christy that we decided to sell our new beautiful house and find somewhere bigger. About a week after our move, my mom came to me with a newspaper clipping from 1993. All she did was apologize for not believing me and asked me to read. It turned out a girl about 17 years old, only a few months older than me, was murdered by her drunken father over an undisclosed altercation in our house. She had been shot in the face with a shotgun, and I kid you not, the picture in the paper was a school photo. She had long dark hair and a red V-neck shirt. If the picture were bigger, I would have bet money she had on a black leather skirt. Her name was Tiffany. I just wish there was a way I could have helped her. She targeted me, not in a mean-spirited way, but almost as if she were crying for help, and I was the one she was asking. If there was any way I could go back there, I would. A voice from the grave. I'm reluctant to give too many details about these events because there was a crime involved. My father was briefly a suspect, and they eventually apprehended a perpetrator who is still alive and in prison. These events occurred in the early 1980s in the Northwest United States. I was 10 at the time and lived with my father, mother, and sister. It started when I awoke one morning to find that my next-door neighbor's home had been roped off with crime scene tape, surrounded by police cars and overrun with reporters. There had been a murder. As I looked out my upstairs bedroom window, the mother of the victim looked up at me with scathing eyes. The victim was a girl in her late teens, early 20s, whom I will refer to as Sarah. I learned that Sarah had been murdered sometime in the previous 12 hours. She had been shot in the head. Soon thereafter, my sister's upstairs bedroom became a place to avoid. She would often awake screaming in the middle of the night that there was someone in her room. Years later, my mother admitted that even she became reluctant to go into my sister's room to change the sheets or to clean there. I couldn't walk past the room without the hair standing up on my head. The cold in the room was very distinct and omnipresent. You felt watched. The best I can describe it is as palpable cloud of anger that you could walk through. I mentioned Sarah's mother because at some point in the investigation, my father was implicated. Sarah's mother had reason to suspect this, and as an adult these many years later, I suppose I would have too. The legal aspect of things, however, meant we couldn't divulge the events of our upcoming Ouija board experience to the police or anyone else. My mother told me that they bought the board out of ignorance, believing it labeled as a game, obviously a bad idea in retrospect, But it wasn't exactly like you could look up the topic on the internet and get a sense that using the board was not wise. Thus, as our family activity one night, not too long after the murder, my mother, father, sister, and I sat down to the Ouija board. It started off innocently enough, with everyone laughing and accusing everyone else of moving the plastic Ouija piece. We didn't make the connection between the board and the recent murder until after a couple of silly yes-no questions. I don't remember what we had asked initially. It didn't take long for the endeavor to take on an ominous tone. Whatever was moving the piece quickly made it known that her name was Sarah, S-A-R-A, and that she had been murdered. The piece made rapid, violent movements across the board, occasionally moving so erratically that it would pull away from everyone's hands, though it would stop moving at that point. I distinctly remember that the chill we felt in my sister's room was now with us around the dining room table. I suppose most parents would have sent the kids out of the room as soon as the implications were apparent, but we were all operating in a sense of shock. Thus, we continue with the questions. I don't remember who asked, but one of us hit on the thought to ask Sarah to describe her murderer. She described a man with curly black hair. Next, one of us asked what type of car he drove, and the answer was that it was a gold VW Bug. It was at that point that the gravity of the situation really became apparent to all, and my sister and I went upstairs to bed. Needless to say, my sister slept with a light on that night. Soon thereafter, I don't recall exactly how long, but I remember it being a few weeks, my father took me to the barbershop for a haircut. As I sat in the chair waiting to start, I watched the overhead television. My father sat off to my side waiting for me. It was at that moment that the police mugshot of a man with curly black hair was flashed on screen during a local news broadcast. The man had been arrested on suspicion of a series of murders in the area, the announcer explained. Then footage from the outside of the home where Sarah was killed came on. That footage was soon followed by the picture of a gold VW Bug in the driveway of a one-story home. Needless to say, with events from the Ouija night still fresh in my head, I turned to look at my father. He looked at me at that moment. Neither of us said a word to each other, but we both realized this was the man Sarah described. But the eerie occurrences in our home only worsened. My room became equally uncomfortable to be alone in. Objects in my closet would occasionally move on their own accord. Clothes would swing or rustle in a closed room. A friend once stood in my room looking at my fish tank while I got something out of the closet about 8 or 10 feet away when we heard a voice in between us. We turned to each other to ask if the other had heard the voice. Neither of us had spoken, though. Luckily, we had to move out of state for my father's work soon thereafter. I've since driven past the old home, but I've never stopped, and certainly never have gone back inside. I'm not sure why I feel compelled to tell this story, other than to say that in the 25 years since it happened, it has never been far from my mind. It's hard to explain away the physical description of a murderer and his car as secondary to some sort of groupthink or overactive imagination. The events were profound enough that they shaped my willingness to consider the reality of a realm beyond the physical and pay attention to things spiritual. In the end, the only question I have is, why, even after her murderer was captured, did Sarah find no peace? The Solitary Footsteps. I've been a stay-at-home mother for over a year now. We bought and moved into our first home, a nearly new, only one previous owner who owned it for a couple of years, mobile home in a very nice community. I've never, ever heard of a mobile home being haunted. Of course, I do know that land can be haunted. I've done a little bit of research and found that the 25 years this community has been here, the lot that we currently occupy has been vacant until our home was put on it in 2002, which is strange because it's a corner lot and could have easily accommodated a home. We bought the place in 2006. I had an uneasy feeling from the first night, like someone was watching me from the hallway. Exactly 1 week after moving in, I gave birth to our first child, which was a daughter. About a month later was the first time I heard it, which is when my husband started working overnights. I was going to sleep and at 2:30 a.m., I was going back to bed after my daughter's 1 a.m. feeding when I heard loud, evenly spaced footsteps of what sounded like boots or heavy type of shoes going up and down the hallway to my room. I lay there in my room for about 10 minutes listening to it, petrified that someone was in my house. My eyes were glued to the doorway, expecting the person to walk right into my room. Then it would go back down the hall and come back. A few minutes after the footsteps dissipated, which I chalked up to tree branches hitting the roof, I was startled again when I heard two distinct male voices having a conversation in my living room. It was so clear, like if I had been closer, I could hear exactly what they were saying. It sounded like an older male, maybe in his 50s, and a younger male, 20s to 30-year-old. And as soon as I stepped into the hallway, the voices stopped as fast as they appeared. I looked out all the windows to see if maybe someone was taking a late-night stroll around the park. There was absolutely no one around. I also had discovered living there now for a year that when all the windows and doors are closed, it's impossible to hear someone speaking outside unless they were right at the window yelling, and then you could only hear them within maybe a 10-foot radius. So I had been able to dismiss that it was someone taking a walk. After that night, I brought my daughter back into my bedroom and she stayed there until she outgrew the bassinet at 2.5 months and went back to sleeping in her own bedroom. A couple of weeks later, I heard the footsteps again. Then the next night, the male voices were there again. In November, I started getting my hair pulled whenever I was in the kitchen. It was like a playful tug, but it was firm enough for me to whip my head around to see who was doing it. There was never anyone behind me or even close to me except once. My husband and I were doing dishes together, and I was washing and he was rinsing, our usual pattern, and there was a hard tug on my ponytail. But it wasn't my husband because he had both hands in the sink. And even if it had been him, my hair would have been wet because his hands were wet, and it wasn't. I seriously thought that I was going insane. Then I started to notice weird orbs and wisps in about a third of the pictures of my daughter. The best one that I had was lost in a computer crash, but then that was only the beginning because after that it got even worse. Around February, I was reading in bed one night when all of a sudden there was a loud, "Hey!" right in my ear. I even felt the heat of the breath on my ear and neck. I was home alone, except for my baby was sleeping in a crib. I was really freaked out, but somehow I managed to finish the book I was reading and went to bed. At 2:30 a.m., I woke up to loud footsteps stomping up and down the hall. That went on for about 2 to 3 minutes. I eventually was able to fall asleep. I've heard the loud "Hey!" several times since. Every time it is followed briefly by the heavy footsteps in the hallway. I haven't had my hair tugged since December, though. I've only heard the male voices in the living room a few times since. But that is because I'm so paranoid that they will wake me up that I've been trying to stay up until 3 a.m. to avoid the 2:30 a.m. wake-up "Hey!" and following disturbances. I know that if it is something, it seems to be mostly residual, so have nothing to be afraid of, or so I tell myself. I just don't like getting woken up hearing voices in my living room in the middle of the night. It freaks me out and makes me think someone is in the house. And the truth is that I'm really considering that I need to move out.